You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Blue Jays reporter, Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, the games are going on down in the Grapefruit League. Baseball's back. That's always fun. As far as the Blue Jays go, some players off to great starts, some players not really getting off to a start due to some injury. So we'll kind of get through all of that. And then towards the end of the podcast, we're also going to get your thoughts on life on the road, because obviously you travel a lot with this Blue Jays team, and I'm sure over the years there's been a couple of fun stories you can probably share with the people listening in on the podcast. But hey, let's start with some good news. And there was some good news on Thursday from this Blue Jays team when you see Jose Bautista hit his first home run of the spring, Jay Happ fire a scoreless start in his first outing. There was a lot of positives to take from that game on Thursday.
Yeah, there really was, and particularly for Bautista, you like to see him get off to a nice start, and I think the World Baseball Classic is eventually going to help him as well get ready for the start of the season, but he's obviously looking for a big-time bounce-back year after a bit of a down season last year, and you know, he's got a lot of proof coming in on a one-year deal, potentially going to re-enter the market again next season. He's looking to reestablish some value, and the Blue Jays, quite frankly, need that bat. And so whenever you see the power coming around from him nice and early on, that's obviously an encouraging sign.
And then how about Happ? And obviously he's a guy who was so good a year ago, and you wondered if he might regress again this year. Obviously a nice start. You can only take so much from numbers as far as spring training goes, especially the first couple times out, but at least there's a comfort level there.
Yeah, no, there is. And you know, he's an interesting one because, you know, I've seen him in Blue Jays camp have, you know, a great spring training and then go on to really struggle at the start of the regular season. And I've seen him have a really terrible spring training and start the year off really well. So he can be a little bit unpredictable in that regard. But I think the main thing for him is that he's feeling good. He's feeling healthy and he's feeling comfortable after, you know, working deep into October last year. He's a guy who's really become a little bit more of an innings eater as his career has progressed. And when he responds well to that workload, you know, obviously that's another encouraging sign for the team as well.
You talked about Bautista and his home run. Kevin Pillar off to a great start, 4-for-10 through four games to start things off. And Dalton Pompey off to a good start. And that's great to see because you like to think this guy who skyrocketed through the minor leagues a few years ago can kind of now say, all right, I went too fast. Now we're back here. Maybe he's settled in. He's going to be heading off to the World Baseball Classic. How good is it to see him off to a nice start?
It really is, and he needs it because, I mean, he really is kind of coming in as the dark horse candidate, and he's a little bit more towards the back of the pack in the left field mix when you're talking about guys like Steve Pearce, Melvin Upton, and to a lesser extent, Ezekiel Carrera. There's a lot of options there, but you know, Pompey does have an opportunity at his disposal where he can take advantage of it. And I think the World Baseball Classic is going to help him as well in this case. I mean, sometimes, you know, players in the middle of competitions for jobs in spring training, it's sometimes not a smart idea to leave the team. But, you know, he's going to have a very prominent role on Team Canada playing against some high-quality pitchers from some other countries. And it's going to be an opportunity for him to showcase his skills as well. So I think he can actually help his case by moving into that role, and then he'll have a couple weeks at the end of camp to kind of come back and try and make a name for himself in that mix for left field.
And a challenging group as far as Team Canada goes in the World Baseball Classic. Yeah. I believe it's Canada, the United States, the Dominican Republic, and Colombia. Is that right, Gregor?
Yes, it is. No, they're going to be up against it for sure, and they're missing some key components as well, and that's one of the reasons why Pompey is going to be such a featured player on that team.
Yeah, Russell Martin not playing in the game. You call it the group of death. That's a term that you get in the World Cup as far as soccer goes. But when you look at the groupings for the World Baseball Classic, that is by far, I think, the toughest group. What's the interest level like in Canada for the World Baseball Classic? I feel like in the United States, there's some mix in there. Some people get really excited about it. Some people just want opening day to come. In some of the Caribbean countries, I think there's a lot more excitement about it. In the Dominican Republic, they won it, of course, last year. And even over in Asia, there's a lot more excitement. What's it like in Canada?
I think it's pretty comparable to the United States. Maybe there's the interest is slightly higher, but I think for the most part, it is kind of hit or miss to a certain extent as well. I think one thing people do love is obviously seeing competitive baseball at this time of year, but I think Canadians really kind of embrace it. when they see how the team does a little bit. There was a game a couple World Baseball Classics ago where Canada beat the United States here in Toronto, and that was that's a game that still does get talked about. So there are certainly key moments from the World Baseball Classic that have really kind of shone through. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of disappointment that Russell Martin is not going to be able to take part in it for insurance purposes. But, you know, I think the Canadians will enjoy the team regardless, but that is going to be a very, very tough division to actually advance in.
And they will, of course, play the United States again. So a chance to kind of reignite that magic from a few years ago. All right, let's talk some injuries, because there's always some in spring training. Josh Donaldson, calf strain, took batting practice on Wednesday. So it seems like he's kind of on his way back. I guess the big injury is Sparkman, the Rule 5 pick of this Blue Jays team. And everybody remembers what Joe Biggini did last year as the Rule 5 pick. I guess there's two ways to look at it when you have a Rule 5 guy get injured. On one hand, you were hoping he could contribute a little bit like Biggini did a year ago, and he's going to be delayed in that regard. On the other hand, you have to keep this guy on your major league roster all season long. And if he's on the disabled list for a little bit, that doesn't take one of those active roster spots up.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this is obviously tough news for Sparkman. He doesn't want to get hurt, clearly, and a guy who wanted to make the team out of spring training. But from a club perspective, there actually really is kind of a positive spin that they can have in all of this. And you know, Sparkman, the fact that he's not going to be able to get ready for opening day means that the Blue Jays can start him on the DL, and then they can also put him on a rehab assignment later on before he needs to get activated. So that gives them a much longer look at him. I mean, Sparkman's a guy who historically has started throughout his minor league career, but the Jays have really been interested in what he could bring in kind of shorter stints and how that mid-90s velocity plays up in that type of role. And you know, now they're going to be able to probably get a look at him for, you know, a very large chunk of April or whenever he comes back before they're actually going to have to make a decision on him. And by then, they should also have more figured out in their own bullpen. So it actually does kind of help improve the depth and gives the team more options long term. But for Sparkman himself, it's certainly disappointing that he's not going to be in the mix of that 25-man roster.
And then how about Devin Travis, another guy who hasn't played yet? Obviously, a year ago, he went through all of this with the injuries. This is not as serious, but where does he stand right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because Travis hasn't played yet. And, you know, coming off, you know, knee surgery and the bone bruise that he dealt with in the off season, the injury history that he has had now certainly makes you at least concerned, because this is a guy who before that dealt with the shoulder problems as well. I mean, when he's been on the field, he's been absolutely lights out for this team and a really key member of the offense. But, you know, unfortunately for him, too often, he hasn't been on the field because of injuries. And you know, now I think the fact that he hasn't debuted quite yet, I think that has to be concerning a little bit for this organization. They still think he's going to be ready for opening day, but they can't necessarily guarantee it either. So they're going to take that rehab slowly. The last thing they want is any kind of setback with that knee, you know, but they would also like to get him into that lineup sooner rather than later just to make sure he does get ready.
All right, let's move on to life on the road. And Gregor, obviously, for most of our writers here at MLB.com, and we've talking to them all about this topic, it's travel around the country. It's international travel for you, which adds another extra layer to it, I guess, obviously, being based out of Toronto. But when you think back on the years you've been covering this team, and I think you said it's six now in the books, what is there a story or two that stands out, a fun story that's come about you traveling with the Blue Jays?
Well, I'm known for, it used to be my first couple of years in the beat when I was getting used to the traveling schedule and booking constant flights and staying in hotels and sometimes not even knowing where I was. I was known to make a mistake or two. And when I was covering the American League Championship Series between the Tigers and Red Sox, I booked a flight to what I thought was Boston Logan Airport. And I got to my connecting flight to where I thought I was going. And I ended up flying into the completely wrong airport and had to miss the workouts earlier on in that day. Had to frantically rebook my flight and ended up having to take three flights to get to Boston for this workout day. So I used to be known for making those type of mistakes every now and then. Sometimes I'd show up with the wrong hotel reservation or whatnot. Thankfully, over time, I've learned to become my own travel agent and smooth those things out. But the first couple of years was a little bit rough when I was getting used to life on the road.
Those airport codes can get a little complicated. And obviously in Boston, it's Logan Airport. I think it's L-O-G. Where were you headed?
I was going to on my now I'm getting tested on my American geography. Does Rhode Island make sense? Is there like a Boston area airport that would be like it was? I had to take a train. It was about an hour away.
Yeah,
from where I ended up, and I think it was Rhode Island, but I'm not.
The two, because that's where I'm from. The two that would be in play would be Providence, Rhode Island, I think.
Yes.
Or Manchester, yes. New Hampshire are both.
Not
too far from
Rhode
Boston,
Island.
But so yeah. Providence, Rhode Island. See, you could have gone earlier in the summer. You could have caught a Pawtucket Red Sox game.
That's true.
And you would have been all set. All right, great stuff, Gregor. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition for Gregor Chisholm. I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli. Brittany, the games are underway. Last time we spoke, I was down in Sarasota before games started. But now things actually get fun. You get to see these guys out on the field again, playing in games, not just doing pitching, fielding their position drills, PFPs. So let's get right to that. And we've seen some guys get on the mound already. Dylan Bundy pitched today. Kevin Gausman, I believe, goes tomorrow. A couple of guys that finished the season strong and the Orioles need a lift from this year. Ubaldo Jimenez pitched on Monday, Wade Miley on Sunday. Let's start by talking about Jimenez because he was real good in September. 3-1, a 2.31 ERA. And from what I hear, he's looking to kind of make it deeper into games this season, attack the strike zone a little more. That's certainly something that he struggled with at times and is easier said than done.
Yeah, and I think with his delivery and the kind of pitcher he is, Tim, that's always going to be a little bit of an issue for him. And obviously, he's a guy who's capable of being one of their best pitchers, and you saw that during periods last year. I think this year, Ubaldo knows it's a big year for him. It's a big year contract-wise. If he can find a way to kind of dispose of guys a little bit quicker to not draw so many full counts or not get ahead and then all of a sudden he's behind guys, it would be huge. And, you know, it's so early in spring training. It's too early to really say, and nobody can predict the kind of year that these guys are going to have. But the thing about Ubaldo Jimenez is he's just always such a steady presence. He's never a guy who's too stressed out. He's always positive. So I think the real concern with him is, will it snowball? And kind of based on his personality and the things that he's doing this spring, you'd like to think not, that he's going to really try to have that consistent approach that they really need in that rotation.
I mentioned that Bundy got on the mound for the first time today. A couple of innings, he gave up two runs, one of them earned. This time of year, though, Brittany, that's not really important. I know the pitchers are more focused on just executing pitches. As a organization, how much do the Orioles put into the number lines in the first couple of weeks of the spring?
Not much, because that run today was a homer. So you have to ask yourself, would this be a home run during the regular season? Most of the time it's not, because what fans don't realize is the spring training parks don't have that third deck that all the MLB stadiums have. So really the wind becomes a lot more of a factor. You see a ball that, you know, you thought would go out, that's a pop-up, and then you see a pop-up that carries out. It just depends on the day, which way the wind is blowing. But the stadiums are so different in spring training than they are during the year that, you know, they don't say, oh, he gave up too many home runs in spring training, we got to be careful. With a guy like Dylan Bundy, though, you know, and Buck Showalter mentioned this the other day, they're expecting big things. Keep in mind, a year ago, we were wondering, is he going to make it through the year? Can he hold up? He was a guy who had dealt with a lot of injuries, a lot of setbacks. So I think having that behind him, having a healthy year last year, being able to contribute as a reliever and then as a starter, these are all things to build on. So as far as they're concerned with Dylan Bundy, as long as he's not injured and he's pitching well, and which his line indicates, then there's really no concern.
And the innings limit will be a lot greater this year as far as Bundy goes, as well as kind of the they just kind of let him go a little bit. All right, the one starter who's not pitching this week is obviously Chris Tillman, still nursing the injury. Any updates on Tillman at this point?
Nothing that would suggest any kind of real big change to his timeline. You know, he's still playing catch. They're going to kind of shoot to get him up on that mound, even though it's a half mound. It's still an elevated throwing surface. So he is making progress. It does definitely seem like that opening day is out of the question. And they could still put him on the disabled list to start the year. But, you know, it's just small little injuries. The same thing kind of with J.J. Hardy. There's nothing too new to report on those guys right now. And I guess we're early enough in the spring that no news is good news. having no setbacks and being on track, even though it's pretty boring, is really what you want.
Another injury this team, really an unfortunate injury this team took, was Michael Bourne, who obviously signed late February 20th. They brought him in, adding some hopeful depth to the outfield, a guy that can get around, maybe not like he used to, but still play the outfield. He was maybe a long shot to make the team from the start, but he hurts his finger catching footballs, of all things. But one thing that he said he's always kind of done as part of his workouts. What does that mean for Bourne and his chances of making this roster?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because, honestly, that whole outfield picture was kind of wide open. There's room for guys who have speed and the on-base percentage and have the defensive capabilities that a guy like Michael Bourne has. And people forget, Tim, he was a big part of their team last year. He started the wild card game. So I don't know if he was that much of a long shot to make the club. I think this certainly hurts. Now he could be up to a month. So that's something you don't want to see. Bourne was on their radar all along. You know, from spring training on, they were just waiting to get a good deal, waiting for him to agree to come to camp as a non-roster invitee. But I thought all along, and so did others, that he would make sense on this team. He presents a lot of things that they really have struggled with. And now, of course, he is going to be a long shot because he's going to be out for up to a month. He won't get the at-bats. He won't get the chances. It's just a really unfortunate freak accident, so to speak.
One guy that's not a long shot at all in any way to make the roster is obviously Adam Jones. And he's off to a great start, which is encouraging to see. He's already made a highlight reel catch in center field, and he's swinging the bat well as well. Is he a guy that generally gets off to a hot start, Brittany?
No, he's not. I think that's probably what makes this a little more encouraging. He's going to the World Baseball Classic, so that could have something to do with it, Tim. You know, he's kind of kicking it into high gear a little bit more. He also has lost a lot of weight. He's really focused on eating healthy, paid a lot of attention to that. I know he works with a chef a lot in the off season. He's probably about 15 pounds lighter than he was last spring. So I think a lot of times when guys age, they realize they can't get away with doing the things that they used to do when they were younger. And Adam Jones might be one of those guys. And real encouraging to see how locked in he is this early. The only thing you have to be careful with, of course, is him kind of going too hard too fast because it's so long of a season. But I think a guy like Adam Jones has been so durable, been so tough over the years, you tend to not worry about that as much as you might have with other guys.
He'll be playing with the Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. Manny Machado grew up in Miami, but won't be playing for Team USA. He'll be playing for the Dominican Republic, and you have a story on the site right now about that and the fact that he's basically kind of paying tribute to his mom and the fact that his, you know, his ancestry lies in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think people don't realize how important that is, what an honor it is to play for some of these teams. And with Manny Machado, and he really wanted to honor his family, his mother, as I mentioned, his grandparents. This was always a dream for them. He's got a lot of family still over there, really has a lot of roots there, even though he was born in Miami. So I think it was a simple choice for him. It was something that he wanted to do. And it'll be kind of interesting because they play the Orioles next week, and Manny Machado will be on the other field. So it's just a neat thing that the World Baseball Classic brings out in a lot of people. It is really kind of the where you're from and the family aspect of it, I think, is one of the cooler parts of watching the WBC.
And that Dominican team is the defending champs, and they once again have a loaded roster and will be one of the favorites in it. They're in the same group as the U.S., I believe, as well. So it'll be a exciting start to the World Baseball Classic and all the way through. All right, before I let you go, Brittany, we're asking all of our writers here at MLB.com to share a fun story from the road, because obviously over the next 6-7 months, you're going to spend a lot of time in hotel rooms and around the country following the Orioles. So if you can think back on all your time covering the Orioles, how about a fun story from the road?
It's tough. I've had a lot of fun things that I've done. Kansas City, I think, is probably one of the more underrated road cities. And the last time that we were there, I went with a couple of the Orioles. They were getting a private tour of the Negro Leagues Museum, which was fantastic. So did that for a little bit and then made sure I hit one barbecue place for lunch,
and then got another one to bring to the press box for dinner. So it is a good thing that Kansas City is not in the AL East. I couldn't eat that much barbecue, I don't think. That was kind of one of the trips that stands out to me as something cool to do on the road. You very rarely get to see these museums and get a tour from the director and get to learn about baseball's history. And that was definitely worth the early morning.
Very cool. And the good thing about Kansas City is you could be there for a 4-game road trip and you could eat at a different barbecue place every meal and never run out.
You can, and I've done it. And then you want a salad for the next 2 weeks.
Exactly. All right. Great stuff, Brittany. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Yankees reporter, Brian Hoke. And Brian, as we got ready to start this podcast, I noted the fact that I'm in a dark VO booth in Manhattan. You're on the field in Tampa enjoying batting practice. I think you have the better life right now.
Yeah, no, I would not trade places with you. I love New York. I love everything about it. But I'd rather be here right now on March 3rd. Yeah.
And the Yankees are playing good baseball as far as the spring goes. Of course, you can only take so much from the final results of spring training games. But heading into tonight's game, as it's Thursday right now, with the Orioles, Yankees 6-1 in their first 7 games. They've played well. They've swung the bats well. They've got good pitching at times. Let's start with Wednesday night because it was the first night game at the newly refurbished Boss, as we'll call it, of the spring. And Jacoby Ellsbury coming through with a home run. Overall, that's a nice spark, and this offense overall looks nice.
For sure, yeah. Ellsbury has driven the ball well since he's been here. He also had a double later in the game at right center field, and he put the home run. It was a no-doubt shot out into the cabana deck in right field. And, you know, they always say, don't believe what you see in March and September, and that's a long way of saying that, hey, you know, it's spring training and you're facing guys that may or may not be in the big leagues this year. But Ellsbury looks like he's come to camp motivated. He's stolen a couple bases already this spring, which is something he doesn't usually do that early in the spring. And I think, he's certainly heard some of the doubts. You know, we've talked a lot about how he has had trouble living up to that $153 million contract. And I'm not sure how you live up to that other than putting up MVP type numbers. And he hasn't done that. But Ellsbury does look motivated, I think, to do a better job at the top of the Yankee lineup this year.
The one guy in that Yankees team right now in that clubhouse that maybe has more attention on him than anyone, and it's amazing when you think of what that roster is generally built upon, though, is Gary Sanchez, obviously coming off the great end of 2016 that he had, and he hit his first home run of the spring on Tuesday. That's obviously a good sign, but overall, you saw him play last late August and September. You're seeing him now. How does the now Gary Sanchez compare to what you saw back then?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what about the home run. It looked like it was, to me, it was a lazy fly ball to left field. It just kept going and going. I think it even fooled the left fielder. And Sanchez said he got under it a little bit. And the bench coach, Rob Thompson, said, no, I don't see that. I think he got it. So I think you're going to see that a lot with Gary Sanchez this year, where he doesn't seem to quite square up the ball, and it still goes out. And we saw that a little bit last year. I mean, with that kind of raw power, he's just going to sometimes hit a home run by accident. I think that, you know, it's kind of interesting to see Sanchez now. You keep asking people around this Yankee camp, what's reasonable to expect? And since nobody's ever seen what he did last year, it's really hard to get a baseline on it. I mean, nobody has ever hit 20 home runs in 53 games like that, not after August 1st in a season. So I think that it's a mystery, but I think the Yankees already believe that he's going to be one of the top catchers in the American League, both offensively and defensively. And really, you talk to Sanchez, he takes a whole lot of pride in his defense. He's more jazzed, I think, by throwing a runner out, which he's done a couple times. He did it twice in an inning recently. He's more excited by throwing a runner out than hitting a big home run. I think that he feels like he can help the Yankees on both sides of the ball. And, you know, with catchers, you always say the defense has to come first. And obviously, he's got elite offense potential, but the defense has to be there. And so far, it has been.
Yankees already faced the Red Sox once this spring. And I talked to Ian Brown a little bit about this on our Red Sox podcast, Brian. But it feels like maybe the beginning of a new chapter in the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. We obviously saw all the young guys for the Red Sox really break through last year with Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts, Jackie Bradley. We saw Benintendi at the end of the year. That team won a division title with all those young guys. And then you see what the Yankees have brought up now late last year and what is going to be coming in the next year or year and a half. And it feels like, you know, there was the great rivalry portion in the 2000s, I guess, and then this rivalry has kind of cooled off a little bit in recent years, but it feels like maybe it's going to heat up again with all this young talent.
I think what you're seeing is the Yankees realize that the 2003-2004 way of building a dynasty, or even 2009, it's just really hard to do that because the elite players aren't getting the free agency. So whereas you used to see teams like Boston and New York load up on established veteran, big price free agent guys, I think you're seeing both organizations realize that they have to develop from within. Their pipeline needs to be productive to get to the top. And you obviously see what the Cubs did, and they're a perfect example of it. Cleveland, to a lesser extent this year. I just think that the game has changed. The finances of the game have changed. And you're seeing a reflection of that here with the Yankees when you look at guys like Aaron Judge, Greg Bird. You're talking about Luis Severino possibly being a rotation. Gary Sanchez obviously came up through the pipeline as an international signee. And the Yankees are going to have to keep developing these guys because you can't just go out and sign what you need. I mean, you see that this past year on the free agent market. Look, the Yankees needed a starting pitcher desperately. There just wasn't one there. So there's no guarantees. But if you already have something from within that you feel good about and has learned the quote-unquote Yankee way from the bottom up, I think you feel pretty good about that going forward. And maybe you can get a player like that on the cheap.
All right, let's get into some more of those young players. Greg Bird, obviously coming off a year in which he didn't play baseball after such a great little start in 2015 when he came up. He's healthy right now, but how has he looked so far?
Looks good to me. I think that he was down playing against the Red Sox in Fort Myers, and you were wondering if the power is going to be all the way back, and I asked him if he felt it was, and he said it was, and then he went out to hit two home runs against the Red Sox. He hooked one around the fake Fenway South pesky pole and then hit one over the monster in left field. So, you know, I think that if he's doing that on March 1st or whatever it is, you feel pretty good about that. There was a game here where he doubled off the wall. I think he's driving the ball. He feels confident when he's throwing the ball, which is a good sign. He didn't do a whole lot of that. He didn't play any defense in the Arizona Fall League. So I think what you're looking at right now is I don't have a whole lot of doubt that Greg Bird's going to be the opening day first baseman, that he can grab that job. I know they've got Chris Carter in camp, and that's a good backup plan to have. But everything I've seen so far, Greg Bird can be that guy.
And then you mentioned Luis Severino, and talk about a good start to the spring. First outing on Monday, two hitless shutout innings. And you have a story on Yankees.com right now, Brian. You're focusing in on the fact that he's worked on some things in the offseason. And one of those things he's really trying to get better is the changeup.
Yeah, that's an important pitch for him. That is huge because it's really hard to be at this level and be a starting pitcher when you've only got two pitches. And he tried it, and you saw the results. As a starter, he was 0-8 last year with an ERA over 8. You can succeed out of the bullpen pitching like that, but for whatever reason, he just lost the feel of his changeup. And the Yankees wondered if he might have muscled up too much over the offseason. So when he went back to the Dominican for the offseason, they told him to kind of lay off the weights, work more on flexibility, being more limber. I think you're seeing the results there. Severino had a terrific changeup coming up through the minor league system and showed it off a little bit at the big leagues at the end of 2015 when he came up and had those 11 big starts. I think that if he can be a three-pitch pitcher, you know, you might be looking at a top-of-the-rotation type guy, top one, two, three starters. But without it, it's really hard to see him having any kind of success long-term in the rotation. And maybe he winds up being a bullpen guy, and that's okay, too. He wouldn't be the first starting pitcher who had to convert to the bullpen. But obviously, there's great value in starting pitching. We just talked about how the Yankees needed one. If Severino can step up and be that guy that they were trying to get over the offseason, that would be huge for this team.
James Caprillion is a guy who, when the Yankees drafted him, seemed like he could be a quick-to-the-major-leagues-maybe type guy. He pitched a little bit early last year, then went down with the injury. He came back in instructs, then he pitched in the Arizona Fall League, was very good. And I guess you've talked to him recently, Brian, about the fact that because of that, because he didn't pitch much last year but then did pitch a lot in the fall, the Yankees aren't letting him pitch right now too much, and he's just got to kind of deal with it.
Yeah, Brian Cashman used the term snail's pace for him, and Caprillion said he kind of feels like a caged bull right now, but that's just part of it. He understands there's a greater plan at work here. They are being overly cautious, but that's because they value his arm. And he looked okay. I mean, he looked good in the Arizona Fall League, struck out almost a batter per inning. He also pitched in the instructs, but I think that with a guy who missed almost all the year, he only made three starts last year before he had the flexor strain in his elbow. Caution when you have an asset that could be as impact as James Kaprielian. That's probably the smart way to go. And I think what this might turn out to be is 2 years ago, the Yankees were in a similar situation where they kind of watched Luis Severino's innings carefully in the minor leagues. And they kept an innings capped on him, and he came up and he helped the team in August and September. They helped them fight for a wild card at the end. I think you might see the same thing with James Kaprielian. If he can pitch well in Tampa, he can move up to Trenton. He's going to be on innings limit, very similar to the way Severino was. But I'm not ruling out the idea that he might be in Yankee Stadium in August or maybe even earlier than that, helping the big league team this year.
All right, before I let you go, Brian, we've been touching base with all our writers here at MLB.com about life on the road because it's starting up again. Obviously, you're going to be down there in Florida for much of the next month or so, and then it's on the road a lot as the Yankees travel throughout the season. Life of the beat writer, I guess, is what we could call it as well. But in all your time covering the Yankees on the road, and even if, you know, assignments before that, is there maybe a gem of a story that stands out to you that people could get kind of a treat from hearing?
Well, now you just said that, I'm thinking back, like, when I left, did I leave the stove on? Because it's been a while. you know what? I will tell you one funny story, and I don't think it reflects very well on me at all, but for some reason, during the ALCS, I was covering the ALCS, and this is not a Yankee story. It was Kansas City. And I touched down in Kansas City, and I said, you know, I feel like some barbecue during the series. And I think it was games 3, 4, and 5. We're in Kansas City, and I said, can I get from the start of this series to the end of this series eating nothing but Kansas City barbecue? And so we went out to a bunch of restaurants, and there was Jack Stack and Oklahoma Joe's and these great restaurants. LC's was another one. I mean, I went 7 for 7 on that trip. And after 5 of them, I was like, this is a really bad idea. And then somebody brought barbecue into the press box, and I said, no, what the heck? You know, we already got 5. Might as well have 6. So, yeah, I'm not proud of that one. I'm not sure why I shared that, but 7 for 7 in Kansas City might be a playoff record that has yet to be equaled on the baseball beat and probably never should be again.
Kind of a remarkable story, and I'll tell you why, Brian. It's because I asked this question to all the American League East writers, and Brittany Giroli also brought up Kansas City and barbecue as one of her stories, although she did not go 7 for 7 in meals, but she did just speak of the dangers of traveling to Kansas City with all the barbecue places and the possibility of getting lunch and then taking some more barbecue to the ballpark and then, mm-hmm. you know, all day long barbecue. So 2 out of 5 American League East writers here at MLB.com hold Kansas City in high regard as far as life on the road. Good stuff.
It's sad. But I think the key is you just skip breakfast and then you have lunch and dinner, and then you don't feel so bad about it.
Great stuff. Thank you, Brian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here with Bill Chastain, our MLB.com Rays reporter. Bill, the games are being played, not just PFPs with the pitchers or batting practice in the cage, but we have real, live Grapefruit League baseball. And the Rays, as we record this, off to a pretty good start as they win 3 of their first 4 games. Not that any of that matters as far as the big picture, but some guys have gotten out there and made their first starts. We'll talk about that. Guys coming back from injury, we'll get into that as well. And some props to the Rays farm system, which has made it into the Pipeline.com top 10 farm system. So we'll touch on all of that. Let's start with the on-the-field stuff, Bill. And when you talk about starting pitchers, Chris Archer has gotten out there a couple of innings over the weekend, hit a walk, no runs. He struck out a batter. Blake Snell made his first start of the spring on Monday, a couple of innings pitched. He got hit a little bit, but none of that really matters in that first outing, I know. Let's start with Archer. How did he feel about his first time out on the mound this spring?
Well, he looks a little bit ahead of everyone, and he should be because he's getting ready to go to the World Baseball Classic. So I think he's a half a tick above everyone else. And you know, right now spring training is going at a little bit of a slower pace because they do have the extra time for the World Baseball Classic. But he looked sharp. I mean, he got it up to 95, 96 the other day.
How about Snell? Obviously, he gave up the hits, but I know pitchers at this time of year, especially the first time out, it's more about the pitches than what the hitters do with them.
Well, you know, Kevin Cash said one of the things that he's got to get down, and this is with a lot of pitchers, is you know, just to improve his control. And he was struggling a little bit finding the strike zone there in the first inning, but then it kind of clicked in, and he said, you know, something kind of clicked in with him, and you know, strikes were, you know, all he was throwing. So, you know, hopefully he's learning some about, you know, what it takes to, repeat his delivery, and then he could have, enjoy better success throwing strikes.
As we record this podcast, actually, Alex Cobb is making his first start of the year. Obviously, came back late last year from the Tommy John surgery. But he's in a mode right now where it's a regular spring training for him, correct?
Yes, and that's very refreshing for him. I mean, even if others on the team don't think somebody is treat somebody like they're rehabbing, the guys who are rehabbing always kind of feel like outsiders. So it feels good to be included and, just be working on, getting ready for the season instead of trying to, rehab an injury to where he could play again.
And then Steven Souza, as we move over to the hitting side of things, I guess he's going to make his first start on Wednesday. Obviously, he had the surgery late last year on the hip in September, missed the end of the year. It's been a long road back, I guess. How excited is he? I know you have a feature on the website right now. How excited is he to get back out there playing baseball again?
He's really excited, and I think he feels good about his decision to have the hip surgery at the end of the year last year. He was actually really torn because he was really hitting the ball well when he decided to end his season, but his thinking was he'd rather get it over with and not have the thing linger going into this season, and they were out of it by the time he had it last year. So he's very encouraged. He feels good. He had, prior to the surgery, he was, in pain away from the field, and then he never really knew when it would bite him on the field. So very, very optimistic and feeling really good about, the effects of the surgery.
And then Tim Beckham is a guy who obviously comes into this spring looking to get one of those utility roles. He can be a guy who can play around that infield, and what a start he's off to. His first two games, Bill, 3-for-4, a triple, a couple of doubles. He walked, scored a couple of runs. I know sometimes they say the pitchers are ahead of the hitters at this point in the spring, but how much effort has Beckham put in to be locked in, it seems like, right out of the gate?
Well, it's funny you bring him up because I went to the back part of the press box here and I'm told he just hit a home run. So, I think it's a good idea. I mean, he's competing to be on this team. And, Franklin's in that thing and so is Daniel Robertson. And, you really don't know how many jobs are going to be open. I mean, Ricky Weeks looks like he's going to be a part of the team, and he's playing well. So I think it's a good thing he showed up ready to hit.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting competition throughout the spring. How about Ricky Weeks? Because I was down there for photo day for the Rays, and you see him come through, and this is a guy, obviously, that was once a top prospect type guy and a guy that was a great young player with the Brewers. And then his career just kind of got off track a little bit, and it was interesting seeing him down in Port Charlotte with the Rays. What are the prospects for him making this club and being a part of it?
I think they're good. I mean, I think they're looking at him as a right-handed first base complement to Logan Morrison. And, he's never played first base before, but he's worked at it, and he's looked pretty good there so far. He, too, he's hit a home run and hit the ball pretty hard, and he's a really impressive guy in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he's been around and he's done that, a veteran guy, obviously. I mentioned the farm system, and this week, starting today, Tuesday, and then going through Friday, MLBpipeline.com is unveiling its top 10 farm systems around baseball. And they started today with numbers 10 and 9, and the Rays check in at number 10. And it's a place, Bill, as far as the top 10 goes, that the Rays used to kind of always be in. And that's how they have put together this successful run that they've had year in and year out. But they dropped out the last couple of years. There wasn't as much depth and high-end talent in that system. And now it's kind of getting stocked up again. Did you expect the Rays to be considered in that upper tier of systems from what you've heard around the system?
Yeah, I kind of did because basically, some of the trades they've made the last couple of years, it's been a high, highly thought of player for prospects. I'll give you a good example. Jeremy Hellickson, he went to the Diamondbacks, and they got Justin Williams, who's a really good-looking prospect, and they got a shortstop. His name escapes me at the moment, but I've seen him play. I know they call him Squid, but his name escapes me right now, and he's pretty slick fielder. But, deals like that, and pretty soon you've kind of restocked. And in the past, it's been they've struggled, you know, getting position players. But, you know, this time it's pitchers, and it looks like they've got some position players in there as well.
That wasn't Adames that came in that deal, right? Adames was in the Price deal? I'm trying to remember back. Yeah, okay. So a couple of guys on that list when you talk about the Rays' top 15 prospects. Jamie Schultz is a guy who's just about ready to be a contributor at the major league level. And I guess the question, Bill, is, what is he going to be? Is he going to be a starter or a reliever? Because he's a guy who can pile up the strikeouts. I think 11.2 Ks per nine the last two seasons. Where do you expect him to end up?
I expect him to end up being a reliever, but, you know, there's really no reason to hurry him out. You know, generally the way they do these things, they'll stretch a guy out to be a starter, and, you know, it's a lot easier to make him, you know, shorten it up and become a reliever. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if they needed relief help during the season, if they brought him in and threw him in there in middle relief, and who knows, maybe revisit him being a starter later. But just the way he looks body-wise and the way he can, you know, get that fastball up there, I think he'd be a great guy out of the bullpen.
Yeah, 27 starts last year, obviously starts, but when you look at the numbers, they scream back end of the bullpen, 163 strikeouts in 130 and two-thirds innings. So he definitely has that punch-out capabilities as far as late-inning stuff. The guy who maybe put the Rays over the top as far as finding their way into the top 10 systems is maybe Jose De Leon, because obviously they made that trade late in the offseason, and he becomes the team's number three prospect. And he's a guy that it's more about eventually being a starter at some point. The question is when. How has his spring gotten off to? Kind of a
well, he hasn't. He'll make his first start on Thursday, I believe. So hadn't really seen him do anything but throw bullpens. You know, I like the way he looks. He looks like a starter. You know, he's got the big lower half and kind of the loose upper half. He's a nice kid, you know, and everything you read about him says he is a good kid. I haven't seen him pitch competitively yet, though, so it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, I got a chance to talk to him when he was down at the Rays, and he really is a super kid, and he just was so enthusiastic to be there as part of the Rays. Obviously, he's with the Dodgers a year ago. All right, one last thing to end on here, Bill, and we're talking to all our beat writers here at MLB.com about this because you're kind of starting the journey again. Every year you guys hit the road for obviously long stretches of time when the teams travel, you're on the road with them. So some stories from the road is what we're looking for. In all your time covering the Rays, Bill, going back, do you have one or two real gem stories that you like to tell? Or maybe
well,
you don't like to
I
tell,
like,
but we can pull
like,
them out of you.
When I stay in Toronto, when the team's playing in Toronto, I stay a lot of times at the hotel at Sky Dome. And or actually, it's Rogers Center now. I call it Sky Dome. But back in the day when I used to run a lot, now I'm a walker. But, you know, and I get up in the morning. And the night before, Roy Halladay and Matt Garza had both pitched like nine innings. In fact, I think Halladay pitched 10 and lost. And I'd always heard about his, you know, work ethic and whatnot. And here I am. I'm up running it. You know, I keep farmer's hours. I always have. But I'm up running. It's like 7 in the morning. And I'm on my way back to, you know, my room. I'm going to go eat some breakfast. And here it is, you know, the next day following the guy throwing 10 innings, and I see Halladay just storming down this hill. And, you know, that left me pretty impressed. I mean, you know, he was the best at the time, and there was a reason why he was the best.
And that hotel, obviously, is the one that looks out on the field as well. Did you ever just do your work from the hotel, Bill, instead of bothering to go to the press box?
You know, maybe if I'd had a room that looked out on the field, but I, you know, my pay grade, I never get those rooms.
Yeah, when the team's home, those rooms tend to go for a little bit more. That is for sure. All right, Bill, great stuff and great story from the road, and all you guys have that kind of thing. It's fun to kind of look back on some of the things that have happened over the years. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of MLB.com Extras. It's been our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here with Ian Brown, our MLB.com Red Sox reporter. Ian, the games are going on in spring training, Grapefruit League action. Red Sox are underway. This is when it really starts to get fun as you get to see this team in action with, obviously, all the expectations surrounding it. I think for the next few weeks, we'll probably start every one of these podcasts with our weekly Pablo Sandoval update. So let's get right to that, and he's off to a good start. RBI double the other way on Tuesday against the Yankees. In your mind, how's he looked overall, whether it be around the bag or at the plate?
So far, so good. He's hustling. He's swinging the bat well. He tried to run his way on for a hit the other day, and the fans kind of responded and cheered him just for the effort there. It was a good idea. He was just thrown out. As far as defensively goes, he's made the plays. He hasn't really been tested, though, yet. Pretty much everything that's been hit to him has been right at him. So I think we'd all like to see, you know, if he can have a little bit more range, obviously with the weight he's lost and with the better shape he's in. But, you know, right now at this stage of camp, you know, we're about a few days in the games here, and I would say we're encouraged by, you know, what he's shown so far. So we'll, you know, check back in a week and we'll see if, you know, we're still treading in the right direction.
With an extended spring training because of the World Baseball Classic, we're seeing really across the league your number 1, 2, 3, 4 starters getting kind of a slow start into the spring, eased into the spring because there's some longer time. David Price will make his first start on Sunday, sim game on Tuesday. And I guess after the game, and in general this spring, I guess, Ian, it sounds like David Price does not want to talk about 2016.
No, he really doesn't. I mean, he doesn't want to be surrounded by any of that negativity. You know, it was really kind of an interesting question that somebody asked yesterday to David Price. Just like, you know, how do your mechanics compare right now compared to where they were last year at this time? And he just kind of snapped back and said, I'm not talking about last year. And, you know, somebody asked him what kind of mechanics he wanted to have this year. And he said, the same kind I had in 2012 when I won the Cy Young Award. So I think, you know, David, I have a really good feeling, Tim, that he's going to have a big year. I think just, you know, the way Rick Porcello stepped up his game last year and the way bringing in Chris Sale, David doesn't want to be the one letting this rotation down. He wants to be a part of what they're doing, and he wants to be right up there and pitching as well as any of these guys. So I think I'm really seeing right now, seeing the competitiveness come out a little bit in him and kind of bullish on what he could do this year.
The Red Sox took on the Yankees on Tuesday, losing to New York 5-4. Not that the score in an early spring training game matters, but you had an interesting article on the site, Ian, just about all the youth now involved in this game on both sides. You look at this Red Sox team and the Betts and the Bogarts and Bradley and Benintendi, all the Bs and all those guys, even the catchers. And then now, because of what they did late last season, the Yankees also with all this young talent. It feels like this is kind of the start of maybe the next chapter of this storied rivalry.
Yeah, I think so. And like, you know, like you said, there's a lot of exciting players on both sides here. And I think the one thing you're going to see is right now the Red Sox are a little bit ahead of the game because their guys have had all these at-bats the last 2-3 years now. And, you know, I think the Yankees are going to see those guys. They're kind of where the Red Sox were in 2014 and 2015, where, you know, they might take some lumps. You don't always know what you could expect with young players, and I think the Red Sox young players are kind of sort of built track records now. So I think you can reasonably know what you're going to get this year from Beth and from Bogart and from Bradley. Maybe not from Benintendi just yet, although, God, there's a lot of excitement around that kid. But, you don't know quite what you're going to get there. But with these, whether it's Sanchez or Judge, you know, you expect, it's not every day you have Mike Trout who just doesn't struggle at all. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of growing pains those guys go through this year. But I think ultimately, in a couple of years, we're going to be talking about a great rivalry, with a bunch of new faces.
You mentioned Benintendi, and as we record this on Wednesday afternoon, he actually hit his first home run of the spring on Wednesday afternoon. That was good news from the game today. The bad news, Henry Owens, who was once one of those young guys the Red Sox had coming up and thought he would be a solid piece of a rotation. So far, it hasn't worked out that way, and you feel like time is starting to run out a little bit on Henry Owens. But 2 innings, 4 hits, 4 earned runs. He walked 3. He did strike out 3. But, again, the command, the control not there for Owens, which seems to always be the issue.
Yeah, I mean, Owens is obviously having some trouble. You know, the one thing you can say with him is, look, he's got that long, sort of lanky frame. So, you know, those guys sometimes take a while before they come into their own. You know, you look at Anthony Miller, you know, the trouble he had. He's obviously one of the best. You know, not to suggest that Owens has that kind of stuff because he doesn't have the overpowering kind of stuff that Miller has always had. But, you know, maybe they still give it a little time and hope that he has a breakthrough at some point this year. You know, he does have one option year left, so they can stash him away at AAA this year. But by this time next year, it's going to be kind of, put up or shut up time, I think, for Henry.
Kind of a neat story this week. Tate Matheny is in the Red Sox system in the minor leagues. He's the son of Mike Matheny, the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals. The Cardinals made the long trip across the state of Florida through Alligator Alley to play the Red Sox. And John Farrell, kind of a cool thing, kind of a tip of the cap to Mike Matheny, I think. He had Tate Matheny play in the game, even though he's not at a point in his career where he would be playing for the Major League club in a spring training game. But he pinch ran. He got to kind of be on the other side from his dad, got to see his dad before the game. Kind of one of the neat things that can happen in spring training.
Yeah, you know, you see stuff like this every year. I thought it was really cool with John Farrell to orchestrate that like he did and make sure that Tate got into that game. Because, look, John Farrell has three sons himself, and they've all been drafted by pro teams. Two of them are now in front of, I think, the Cubs front office, and one of them is still pitching, I think, for the Royals. So, you know, he knows that, you know, you have these sons in pro ball, it's hard to actually be able to watch them. So to be able to create an opportunity where Mike Matheny could see his son play live, I thought that was a really cool move of John. I know that Mike, having talked to Mike, I know he really appreciated that.
And the kind of the cool thing on the other side of that is Tate Matheny pinch ran at first base, and his dad immediately called for the throw over to first base to try to pick off his son, which was kind of fun as well. The World Baseball Classic is almost here. It gets started on Monday morning, bright and early, with games in South Korea. Hanley Ramirez hoping to still play, but he's kind of nursing an injury right now. But Xander Bogaerts is on his way, the long trip to the Netherlands. Did these guys get enough work in before they went that they're confident in how they're going to be able to play?
Yeah, I think they did. You know, especially Bogaerts came in here and got his work in. And Hanley's been going through some shoulder problems there. That's a little bit of a concern. So hopefully, he showed some progress there. I don't know if the Red Sox are crazy, but him going over there, if he's still having trouble with his shoulder. He has been DHing in games here, but he hasn't been able to throw yet. So I'm sure he's going to DH for the Dominican, you know, if he can go. But they'll make that decision the next day or two. But Bogaerts, I know Bogaerts is really excited to go over there. Because last time he went, he was a 19-year-old kid, I think. And now that he's kind of coming to his own, so he's excited to really kind of soak it in more for the WBC this time.
And I remember that 4 years ago, Red Sox fans were excited to get to see Bogaerts play in the World Baseball Classic because at that time he was one of the top prospects in baseball as opposed to one of the best young shortstops in baseball. If I remember right, he kind of took his lumps in the World Baseball Classic 4 years ago. He wasn't quite ready, I think, for that level. I'm sure he'll be better this time. And I think he's playing third, right, Ian? Because that team
is
just loaded with shortstops.
Yeah, no shortage of shortstops. So, yeah, he's a little familiar with third base. Played there, for the Red Sox down the stretch in 2013 and also in 2014 for a while when they reacquired Steven Drew. So at least there's some familiarity. And he did work a little bit of third during camp before he left.
Yeah, that Netherlands team, I think. Jonathan Schoop, obviously, is second baseman, but then they have Didi Gregorius. Jerks and Profar, I think, is on that team as well. So lots of good infielders playing, and they're all obviously from Curaçao and not actually the Netherlands. All right, one last thing to touch on with you, and we're asking this of all our MLB.com beat writers, Ian, and you're getting started here on the, you know, what is a long journey of the season. A lot of time on the road when the Red Sox are traveling. So think back across your career covering this Red Sox team, all the travels you've done. Do you have one or two fun stories that you can share with us about life on the road?
Yeah, it's just kind of funny when you're in the same town as the players and you never know where you're going to bump into someone. And I remember when Hideki Okajima was on the Red Sox, I'm a big sushi fan, so I'd always go out to lunch with my friend Rob Bradford from WEI.com. We go to sushi in just about every city. And this place in St. Petersburg, we would always see Okajima and his interpreter every single time we went there. It was just kind of a funny thing. Like, no matter what time we went, we would always see them. And then they, you know, Okajima started to smile about it and, kind of break cultural barriers a little bit, even though he didn't speak much English. But just those chance encounters, like for instance, last night I was out with a few of the writers and David Price and Joe Kelly happened to be sitting at the table right across from us. So, you know, it's just kind of cool to be around and to see some of the interactions these guys have sometimes away from the ballpark. And, see a whole different life they live, because, you know, these guys, we're just at a restaurant having a good time. Anytime these guys go, they have hundreds of fans who want to talk to them and get autographs and stuff like that.
Yeah, and at least seeing you guys, they know that's one table they don't have to worry about autograph seekers coming from. So that's a plus. All right, great stuff as always, Ian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.